CBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're headed to the surface of the moon on a Starship flight. Bob Zimmerman is here. He keeps the website Behind the Black. And before the blastoff, you've got to name a crew and a passenger list. The man is a billionaire, Miyazawa, and he's announced 8 passengers he will take with him on his private Starship flight. To say unprecedented is inadequate, so I ask Bob help. Bob, is this something that is important to Miyazawa? We've had private flights before, but to the moon, very high risk, correct? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. The billionaire, Yuzaku Miyazawa, he had announced this flight with Elon Musk, what is it now, almost 4 years ago, 3 years ago. It's not a landing, it's an orbital flight. It'll go around the moon and come back, Starship. He announced his flight right at the very beginning of Starship development. He had basically paid Musk some undisclosed amount of money to buy the entire flight, so it would be him and plus passengers. And he announced this was going to be part of a project he has to take artists or creative individuals with him to the moon. Wanted to promote creativity and get different perspectives of what it's like to go to the moon. That was his goal. And so this week he announced for the first time the passengers he's going to take with him. He had put out a whole contest in which people who wanted to go would submit videos, and you could have watched a bunch of those videos to get an idea of what people are proposing. And so he announced the 8 people. And it's a full list of 10, including 2 backup astronaut passengers. And it's a wide mixture of people from many different countries, the U.S., U.K., Japan, Czechoslovakia, a whole range of people with many different disciplines, from artists to rap singers, to video photographers, a whole range of people. The one that's most interesting to the space community is Tim Dodd, who was chosen. Tim Dodd is the creator of Everyday Astronaut, which is a video website. He regularly does videos on a variety of technical and engineering issues, and he has posted several interviews with Elon Musk giving tours of Musk's facilities, and has been very influential in that matter. It's done good work. Well, he submitted a proposal, and he got on. He's one of those passengers. That'll be kind of cool because he's going to be there to actually videotape and report the experience, and that'll be really good for the mission. I posted on Behind the Black Embedded the video of him announcing personally his choice, and he's kind of overwhelmed as he says, "This is ridiculous." He can't quite absorb the possibility that he's going to go around the moon, but when Starship starts flying, these people will go. There's no question of that. And I didn't say if. I said when Starship is flying.
Collins Aerospace to build a better space flight suit, a better space suit. This is an update for NASA, correct, Bob?
Correct. Well, NASA, for 14 years and $1 billion, attempted to produce a replacement spacesuit for the ones they use on ISS. And after 14 years and $1 billion, NASA had produced nothing. And I underlined nothing. They just had a lot of PowerPoint presentations and a few design blueprints. And so they finally gave up and they accepted the idea of what I proposed in my 2017 policy paper, capitalism in space. Hire the private enterprise to do it. And so back in June, NASA picked 2 companies, Collins Aerospace and Axiom, to be the vendors who would provide spacesuits for the agency. In September, they purchased some suits from Axiom. These are not made yet, but they purchased some suits from Axiom for their moon spacewalks, the ones that will take place when they get to the moon, if the Artemis gets to the moon. And so they purchased that. But this new contract that was announced this week is with Collins, the other vendor, to build spacesuits for NASA to use on its space stations, ISS, or when it sends astronauts to private space stations. And as recommended in Capitals in Space, NASA doesn't own these suits. It didn't design them. It's only buying them from private companies. So these companies own the suits and can sell them to others. And there are five American space stations being built right now. And every single one of those companies is going to need suits. Axiom is building a space station, but they're building their own suits. So they won't have to buy from them, but there are others. And so Collins has customers potentially. And so this is where we are now. NASA has to, and you know, Collins' spacesuit could eventually end up on the moon as well. There's no real, there's only subtle differences between one on the surface of a planet and the one in space. And so this is just more competition and more private enterprise. Job.
Astrobotics, Peregrine Lunar Lander. This is commercial space. What is Astrobotics?
Astrobotic is a private company. It's one of about a dozen private companies that are attempting to build lunar landers for NASA. They're the first. They have a Peregrine lunar lander that they're preparing. It's a smaller version of their larger Griffin lander, and it's going to fly on the very first Vulcan Centaur rocket launch for ULA. That rocket launch got delayed for 2 years because Blue Origin hadn't delivered the rocket engines necessary. But that rocket engines have been delivered, and so the Vulcan launch is now scheduled for sometime in the first quarter of 23 next year. And the delay actually helped Astrobotic because Peregrine might not have been ready in time, but it has now passed its vibration and acoustic tests. These are the tests that prove the spacecraft can survive the vibrations of launch. And so they've now proven that, and they have some more testing to do, but they will then, after that testing is completed, they will deliver this to Cape Canaveral, where it will be integrated onto the Vulcan Centaur for the launch. So this is good news. The lander itself carries private payloads as well as NASA payloads. This is how it works. The private company owns the lander, and it can sell payloads not only to NASA but to others. So NASA financed a lot of the mission, but that's by buying payload space on this lander. And once this goes, they have others to follow, John.
More landings on the moon planned for future. NASA is the customer, not the builder. NASA now has money to spend, I learned from Bob, and they're spending it wisely for a backup. From whom, Bob?
We don't know yet from whom, but we do know that SpaceX already has the first lunar contract to build a manned lunar lander. That would be Starship. But NASA has always wanted to have more than one private company building for it so that they've got redundancy and some competition. And so initially they couldn't award a second contract because Congress hadn't given them the funding. But Congress, after whining a bit about this fact, even though it was Congress's own fault, gave NASA additional funds, and so NASA put out a bid for companies to compete for this second manned lunar lander contract. And so now we have two consortiums bidding. These are team efforts. One is being led by Blue Origin with Boeing and Lockheed Martin as partners. And the other one is being led by a company named Dynetics, which is not as big a company, but it has done a great deal of work already for NASA and others. And it's partnering with Northrop Grumman, which is a big company. And so these both have submitted bids. These both had submitted bids the first time. NASA had rejected them. Whether any of them would have won a contract had NASA had the funds is unknown. But NASA's analysis of both was not tremendously enthusiastic. So it's very possible. We do not have any details, by the way, of either of these bids. They've not made them public at this point. It is possible that both bids have been revised somewhat to try to answer the questions that NASA put forth the first time. Both of them are offering small LEM-sized craft, similar to the Apollo, maybe bigger, but not much bigger. Neither is anything like Starship in its capabilities. But it would give NASA a backup, and that's the important thing. And it also creates competition. These companies will now be building something to compete with others to get people on the moon.
SpaceX is intimately involved in Starlink, but SpaceX is also selling its services on its Falcon 9 from OneWeb. Remind me what OneWeb wants. What is its mission profile, Bob?
OneWeb is building a constellation of satellites to provide internet service to the globe, just like Starlink. So the two companies, their satellite constellations, are direct competitors. OneWeb was launching through Arianespace mostly on Russian Soyuz rockets. Well, something happened in February. It's called the invasion of the Ukraine by Russia. And then when that happened, Russia was about to do a launch for OneWeb, and Russia's then head of Roscosmos, Dmitry Rogozin, suddenly said, no, we're not going to do that. You're being mean to us. You put sanctions on us, so we're going to cancel the flight, and we're going to confiscate the satellites from OneWeb. They did that. So what did OneWeb do? OneWeb and Arianespace canceled the remaining six launches with Russia. That was almost $1 billion in somewhere between 500, half and $1 billion in money that Russia was going to earn. Well, they got canceled, and OneWeb had to find replacements. They've already done one launch. India provided them a launch. SpaceX now this week successfully launched 40 OneWeb satellites, the first launch from SpaceX. SpaceX might be a competitor, but SpaceX also is a rocket company, and they want to make business. And so if OneWeb needs the business, they were quite willing to offer it to them. And it's a good way to also stave off regulators, because SpaceX can now point to this launch and say, look, we're not a monopoly. Starlink is not a monopoly. We're helping others. And so successfully launched. SpaceX has got two more OneWeb launches. India's got another one. That will get the OneWeb constellation complete, and then it'll be competing with Starlink directly, John.
I just had an email from Starlink offering an upgrade and a discount. Rather than upgrading for $2,500 a year, upgrading for only $1,900 a year. But it's a little strange, Bob. I mention it only because we're in uncharted territory here. What I get for the upgrade is that I can make the scanner melt the snow faster, and also anticipate the snow when it comes. In other words, it's like a weather vane. It's strange. I thought, well, give me faster speed, although it's hard to get much faster than it is now. So something's going on with marketing and Starlink. I puzzle about it. I wonder if they're making money.
They're just offering additional services with the hope that they can make more money. That's all. And that's competition. Competition causes innovation. So SpaceX wants to make people want Starlink, so they offer other things and they innovate to make the system better so that they can keep ahead of the competition, like OneWeb. And that's just the way it works. That's all it is.
It is cool that it can melt snow. I like that.
Yeah, right. That's why cats like to sleep on their dishes, you know.
With snow coming, we're going to the China space station, which is on the Starlink chart. As you watch the satellite swim overhead, it's CSS. That's the China but they're looking to expand their space station. How so, Bob?
Yes, the Chinese space station, which they call Tiangong 3 as well, which means Heavenly Palace. And I prefer Tiangong 3, by the way. But that's okay. Both names work. Their chief designer has outlined a potential design in which they could expand this station. Now, basically, all the big modules are now up there. They have some fine-tuning to do to complete the construction, but basically the whole thing's up there. But he's pointing out that it would not be difficult, by just adding modules, to expand this and even double its size. And I would not be surprised if that happens, not at all. The space station is set to be a minimum of 10 years in orbit, but they designed this station very smartly, so it would be very easy to add modules as well as replace modules. With that kind of design, there's no limit to how long it can stay in space, as well as size. It can grow. And so they've laid this out, and we'll just have to see if they decide to do it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do, John.
Virgin Orbit. Virgin Orbit is seeking permission to launch from the UK. But what's happened, Bob?
I don't know. There's games going on. This is a Richard Branson company, so there's always games going on. They have been blocked from launching in Cornwall in the UK, in England, for now almost 6 months. They wanted to launch in the summer. Permits had to be obtained from the United Kingdom Civil Aviation Authority, and they just haven't been issued. Well, the CAA has issued the permit for the runway to launch from, because this is a rocket that launches from the bottom of an airplane, a 747. But they have not actually issued the license to launch. And so a few days ago, Virgin Orbit announced a tentative launch date of December 14th. Well, a day later, the UK regulator said, no way, Jose, you don't have your permits and you're not launching that date. And since then, there's been a little kerfuffle between the regulators and Virgin Orbit about what caused it, what's causing this delay. The regulators are claiming, no, they're not the ones causing the delay. It's technical issues. I just don't believe that. I'm sorry, I don't believe that, because Virgin Orbit, they might have some issues, but they're not unusual issues. They've launched four times already with this rocket on 747 successfully. So I don't know what's going on here, but I think the Civil Aviation Authority is just being very bad at putting the regulations forth. If they don't get going soon, I don't know how the UK is going to compete. They've got two more launch spaceports being built in Scotland. How are they going to compete with European spaceports that are being built if they cannot get launch contracts approved by the regulators? And let's go straight to the other story. Sweden is upgrading a suborbital launch site that the European Space Agency has used for decades for test launches. This is very similar to Wallops Island in the U.S., where NASA used it for suborbital test flights for decades, and only in the last decade, when the NASA switched to private enterprise, did it become an orbital launch facility. And so this Swedish launch site, it's called S-Range, is now being adapted to do small sat rocket launches, orbital launches, and they're hoping by next year to start doing some launches. And if so, they're in competition with the UK. And if the UK's regulatory agency can't approve any launches, guess where the business is going to go? It ain't going to go to them.
Let's go to Mars. Bob Zimmerman, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.